I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me. It's very nice to be here at this wonderful conference. What I will be presenting is a joint work with Yeyun Hu, who is here, and Dava Khoshnevisan from Utah. And so we studied a polymer model with charges. So first I will describe the model. So the model is given by a sequence of charges, QK, which are IID, and S, a simple random walk on ZD. They are independent, and we consider the joint law, which is P. So QK, maybe I write this. So QK is the charge of monomer K, and SK is the position of a K-th monomer. So when we have this, we can consider a given position X, and we call QX the charge at X. It is the sum of the charges who are at position X. And then we define HN as the sum of square charges, and if we expand the squares, you see that it is the same quantity as this one. So it is sum of QG, QK, when G, monomer G, and K are at the same position. So there is interaction only when monomers lie at the same position. And HN tends to increase when QG, QK have the same sign. Okay, this. So then we define a polymer measure. So this one. So we consider not Hamiltonian is not exactly HN, but minus HN over N, we change sign, and this is important because it makes so configuration where signs with the same sign together have greater probability. So that's why I say that charge with the same sign attract in this model. So this is classical. I would like to mention a bit of literature. So this model, as far as we know, was introduced by Grael and Orland in 88. So they have two papers. First, they consider a quench polymer model. So this quench means that we take a given realization of the charges. And they consider the same Hamiltonian as we do, that is minus HN over N. They work first without geometry on the complete graph, and they find a phase transition between collapsed phase at low temperature and an expanded phase at large temperatures. Then in a second paper, they extend their first work, and so in the second paper, they work with chain constraints, so similar to a random walk, but already they generalize Qs to be charges to be vectorial instead of a scalar as we do. Okay. Also, I would like to mention two papers of mathematical literature. So a paper by Putis and Slade, who work with same model, but Q is not random. Q is equal to 1. And they prove that this measure has a diffusive phase if beta is small or negative. Second paper is by Balthasar and Smog. It's a continuous polymer model, but it, as far as I understood, it corresponds to the same Hamiltonian with non-random Q. And for large beta, they prove that end-to-end distance is has bounded exponential moments, and this doesn't depend on the length of a polymer. So we'll see, in fact, in our model, we prove existence of a diffusive phase, and also we examine what happens at large beta. There are many more papers about HN. One reason for this is that there is another model for polymers with Hamiltonian HN. So it is not the same as our model, because charges with the same sign do not attract, which we expect from electrical charges. So this is different literature. And it is known for this model, and the two last papers are mathematical papers, and it is known that annealed polymer model with Hamiltonian HN is always localized. OK. Okay, recently there has been lots of works on H-chain itself. So I mean distribution of H-chain, limit laws, and moderate and large deviations of H-chain and of joint measure. I did some Markov chain Monte Carlo simulations of the polymer. So I'll give you a few pictures. So these are two-dimensional pictures with charges equal to plus or minus one with equal probability. And this is length 1,000. So this is a regime of small beta. And it looks like pretty much a simple Wandermark, in fact. Actually, we'll prove that the distribution converges to that of a simple Wandermark. Then we increase the inverse temperature, and I increase it by very slow, very small steps. So this is 2 over 100, then I increase by it's 4.35, and then I increase it just a bit more, and we have a very different behavior. So I can explain what the numbers are. So the this circle is the starting point of a polymer. And this is the ending point. So the number above is the local time, this number of monomers at a given position. And the number below is the charge at this point. OK, so, and so you see that we have 4 points with real large local time, and charge is positive on two of them and negative on the two others. Okay, and we will prove this behavior at large beta. Okay, so I will present now results. First, I will. We can still increase beta, but it does not change very much when beta increases. So we double beta, and of course, when beta is very large, the polymer is more condensed, but it still has the 4 points and. Small range. Okay, so about the log beta regime, we do a technical assumption. We assume that charges are centered and that variance is one. And also, we have a second technical assumption, which is that the Laplace transform of a charge is not much larger than that of a Gaussian distribution. Okay, so if we consider standard classical distribution in the literature, I mean Q equal to plus or minus one with equal probability, or Q given by a unitary centered Gaussian distribution, then we can take kappa equal to one in the above. So we. Maybe I should recall what is said. So Z is the free energy, and it depends on the charges. This is expectation of beta Hn over n given okay, so this is a quench partition function. We fix the realization of the charges, and we average E beta Hn over n. And we define the delocalization set of betas as a set of betas for which Z of beta converges in probability to E beta. And we have a theorem. So if we assume assumption H, then D is an interval. It contains, it goes up to 1 over kappa at least. And for all beta in this set, the distribution of a polymer is at total variation distance close to zero in probability from the distribution of a simple Wandermark. It is a bit awkward to use conditional distribution, but this means the distribution of a simple Wandermark. Okay, so maybe I can freeze. So the proof of this theorem is an easy consequence of a proposition that we have here. So so we introduce a modification of a partition function. So it is the same as a partition function, but we introduce an indicator that maximum local time is not larger than epsilon n. And for this quantity, we have an annealed estimate. If epsilon is small enough, depending on beta, then expectation of Z epsilon and beta converges to E beta. So this is an annealed estimate because we are, in fact, averaging a conditional expectation. So it is this is an annealed partition function restricted to local times being not larger than epsilon n. So I'll explain later on how we prove a proposition, but I just want to explain how we prove a theorem from the proposition now. So first step is to remark that the proposition implies that if epsilon is small, then Z epsilon beta converges to E beta in L2. And this is a very simple estimate, so we take L2 distance, we expand the square, and this one, by Jensen's inequality, is not larger than expectation of Z epsilon 2 beta. But we know that 2 beta times epsilon times 2 kappa is less than 1. So this converges to E 2 beta, same as this one, and this one is minus 2 E beta, E beta, and so the difference converges to 0. Okay, so then we can improve a bit from 4 to 2. If we change convergence in L2 to convergence in probability, because already we know from the first point that Z epsilon 2 beta converges to E beta. So we just need to know that this converges to 0 in probability, but this is a positive variable and its expectation goes to 0. Okay. So this proves that, I must say that Z epsilon n is the same as Z n if epsilon is bigger than 1 half because the maximum local time is not larger than n over 2. So this proves the inclusion. Now, we say as well that this is an interval, so this is an easy consequence of Jensen's inequality. This is immediate. And now I'll explain how we prove the statement about the total variation distance. So total variation distance, by definition, is the maximal difference in the probability given to an event A. So I will intersect A with this event that the maximum local time is not larger than epsilon n. And of course, this is not larger than supremum of d1 of A plus d2. So d2, this quantity we know, of course, because we are working with a simple random walk, that this goes to 0. This is a number. This one is a... So for this one, you will remark that P beta n this is 1 minus Z epsilon n beta over Zn of beta. This one, according to the assumption that beta belongs to the delocalized set, converges to E beta in probability, and this one converges as well to E beta in probability if we take epsilon small enough. So D2 converges to 0 in probability, and we just have to prove that D1 converges to 0. So D1 is bounded by the L1 distance between densities, and L1 distance is not larger than L2 distance. So this is what we say here. And so we expand the square, and if epsilon is small enough, everything goes to E2 beta. So this one converges to E2 beta in probability, same as this one. So this converges to 1, this converges to minus 2, and this one converges to 1 as well. So difference converges to 0 in probability. Okay, I want to emphasize that this estimate is stronger than the central limit theorem. Of course, this implies that the polymer has a Brownian scaling. because the two measures give the same probability to typical events. Okay. Now, so now we'll discuss how we prove it. So the lower bound is only a consequence of Jensen's inequality. So first we'll compute expectation of Hn, so Hn has this representation as well. So if we fix the work, then we average over charges, and expectation of one charge is zero, so if G is not equal to K, then expectation is zero, and it is one if G is equal to K. So we get this, and this is exactly N. Okay, so then we can apply Jensen's conditional inequality, and expectation of Z phi on beta is this quantity, and according to Jensen's inequality, this is larger than E beta, and of course this is a typical event for the simple random walk, so lower bound is E beta. Okay, so we used the fact that expectation of Q not is zero and variance is one. For the upper bound, it is more complicated, of course. We need this lemma. So in this lemma, we have the assumption that epsilon is small with respect to beta. And the lemma says that expectation of beta over n times the square of the sum of q charges is not much larger than e beta l over n. These are error terms. And this is uniform in L. A permitted value for the local time. So L must not exceed epsilon n. So how we prove the lemma? So first, we want to remove this square here. So we introduce xi, centered unitary Gaussian variable, and we can write this. And then we integrate over q's. So we obtain the nth power of the Laplace transform of the charge at this point. Now, as n goes to infinity, this converges to zero. So the development of the Taylor expansion of phi of t at t equals to zero will play an important role. Okay? And this actually is the main contribution, provided that the contribution of psi large is finite. And so to bound the contribution of psi when this is not small, we use the assumption of the definition of kappa. So psi of t is not larger than e kappa t squared over 2. And we have to use the assumption that L is not larger than epsilon n, and that 2 kappa epsilon beta is less than 1 to prove that the contribution of psi with this is negligible in this expectation. Okay? But this is where kappa matters. Okay? Maybe I show again the result. So we have, and then I'll discuss how this implies the upper bound on expectation of z epsilon beta. So this is what we do here. So we use the second formula for Hn. So Hn is sum of squares of charges at x. Okay, so this is a product of independent variable. Here I obtain, so this is a sum of Lxn charges. So I can apply the lemma, and I obtain exactly this. So this is the main contribution, and you have to notice that this is one, actually. This is one as well, and this is negligible. We have a separate lemma to prove that exponential of c times sum of squares of log scale times over n square is negligible. And so this converges to this quantity, which is arbitrarily close to e beta. So this proves the proposition. Okay, so now I want to present the second important result, which is as well a consequence of this proposition. There. So I have not introduced yet the free energy. So free energy is the limit of n log of a partition function. It exists because hn over n is subadditive, and for existence we only need that variance of q naught is finite. So we'll make the assumption that h is still true, and we call beta critical the supremum of t. So this is not a definition of, and we want to relate beta critical, of course, to free energy. So of course, if beta belongs to d, then this converges to e beta in probability, so f converges to 0 in probability. So, and that is continuous, so of course for beta smaller than beta critical, f is 0. But more important, we prove that if beta is larger than beta critical, f of b of beta is larger than c beta minus beta critical. So this is a first order phase transition. Slope of, so f is 0. And then slope is positive already when we leave a critical point. Okay, and also we have this statement that when we are away from the critical point, then we are something which is singular with a random mode, because local time is of order n with a constant that actually does not depend on beta. It is greater than some constant. So I will not give a proof of this, but only an idea of the proof. Well, already I think that this simple computation gives a good idea of what is happening. So we take beta, epsilon, eta. We assume that this is larger than epsilon. And then this probability is ratio of partition functions, because this one over this one is the probability that S star n over n is not larger than 1 minus eta over 2 kappa beta. Okay, so this is an equality. Z n of beta, it is expectation of exponential. So by Jensen's inequality, this is larger than 1. I have this maturation, and according to the proposition, because this times beta times 2 kappa is less than 1, both expectations converges to the same limit, that is e beta. So difference converges to 0, and so this, the expectation of this probability converges to 0, which means that L star over n cannot be in a given range. If it is positive, then it needs to be at least 1 over 2 kappa beta. And this is, we work from this, and then we prove the first order transition in terms of free energy. But in my mind, this is already the first order phase transition. Okay, and finally, I want to discuss what happens at low temperature. So this is very different from what I have been presenting in the first part. Okay, excuse me. So I have to focus on this. So we have to consider parity, because we work with a simple symmetric random walk on ZD. Of course, we could have taken a lazy random walk. This would have been a bit simpler. But anyway, consider Q epsilon P as the sum of when K has parity P of QK epsilon. So this means when epsilon is plus, this means positive part of QK. And when epsilon is minus, this means negative part of QK. Okay, so Q epsilon P is the total charge of sine epsilon available at the sites with parity P. Okay. This then I will come back to this. And when D is equal to 2, we can compute maximum of Hn. So maximum of Hn gives the configuration with maximal probability. And we claim that it is exactly sum of Q available charge square. So I will draw a realization of S that has maximum Hn. It is as follows. So I will assume that so this is zero starting point. I will assume that here I take plus charges minus charges. So I will define Sn is x, IP of n, sine of q. I define these 4 points, x even plus x odd plus x minus even and x minus odd, and I consider sk as x with parity k and sine qk. And this is a realization of a simple random walk, because when I start from an even position with charge plus, then I will go to next k will be odd. So I can go either to this one or to this one according to the charge. This is possible. This is a step one. And so this is indeed a random walk. And assume then next charge is minus, then I go here. And if next charge is plus, I go back. But this is a simple random walk. Okay, so this indeed, and of course, I will put exactly charge Q. So I have two big Qs. So this is charge at X. This is sum of qk1 sk equal x and qx plus odd, for instance, and this is exactly the total available charge q. This is if I take this realization of Sk, then the charge at this point is exactly the available charge at this parity for sine plus. Well, we have to think of the pictures I show at the beginning. We have these 4 points, and there is a possibility to realize this maximum. Okay. So we introduce an event. So I consider alpha positive, less than 1. And I define S as the event that I've confined 4 points. So their 4 points are x, epsilon, p, when epsilon is plus or minus, and p odd even. And I require that the charge at this point the sine epsilon of this charge is at least 1 plus alpha over 2 times the available charge at this sine and this parity. Okay, so maybe okay. This is what happens here. I have 4 points, and for example, here I have almost all the negative charge at this parity from all my polymer. Okay, I have very few negative charges at the same parity. So same parity as this one is here, above, here as well, but total charge is small. Okay, and so this event is typical if beta is large enough. Okay, so it is typical that I will have most charges on these 4 points. Knowing this, we can consider excursions from these 4 points. And so I have my 4 points. Now I will assume that I have an excursion from some position in the square to another position in the square, and that this excursion has length L. We have a lemma that says that if we map so I can map this excursion onto the square, this still gives the realization of a simple Wondermock. And so I just do this, and h n increases by c alpha times n times l if we do this. So of course we have an entropic loss because we map 2 to the d l configuration to 1. But this one has much larger energy. So when beta is large, this is favorable, and in this way we prove that tails of such an execution are exponential. Okay, and this has to prove, so the diameter of a polymer is like log n, because we have as much as n excursion with exponential tail, and n to n distance is bounded when beta is large. Okay, so I've been quick, and so I'm already at the end. So open question, of course, we don't know exactly what happens at beta critical. We would like to find out. A more realistic open question in my mind is the question is about low temperature. From simulation, it looks like what happens at large beta is already the case at beta supercritical. So we'd like to prove that for instance, Sn remains bounded when beta is larger than beta critical, and that diameter is still logarithmic. And then another open question is that when beta is negative, we observe no phase transition. The polymer is always like the simple Wondermock. So this is because interactions are too small. So we have to change, instead of considering Hn over n, we should change this to a smaller thing, to n to some power, but a power less than 1. It is known that if we remove n, the polymer is always localized, and so we'd like to find the critical exponent for this. So this is and also a difficult question, I guess, is not only to find the correct order, but also to describe what is, if there is a transition to a folded state, and what it is exactly. Okay, I thank you all for your attention.